represent the plaintiff appellant, Cheryl Lloyd, in this matter. This is a really unusual case. It's not one that's been very fun to bring because it put a judge and I on opposite sides of ethical arguments, and that's never a good place to be. This case lays bare, in my opinion, the tension that exists between 3506.4 of the Rules of Professional Conduct and 3502.6 of the, 5302.6 of the Judicial Code of Ethics. There is some discussion regarding Nebraska Revised Statute 108, which I do not think has application to the underlying problem in this case. And the reason is 108 is a fee dispute statute, where a dispute arises between an attorney and the client, and the court has to referee that dispute. In fact, the case that Judge Hopper relied on was a fee dispute where the attorney had been ordered to return monies to the client or face suspension. And ultimately, the attorney failed in his argument to keep the money that he wanted to keep and was ordered to return the funds, but given, I think, 30 days to do so by the Supreme Court. The basic case is that my client had a workers' compensation claim. She settled that claim after months of negotiation with the defense. The appellee doesn't disagree with our position that we should get the benefit of our bargain. The problem came up when Judge Hoppert decided that we had to disclose fees and expenses. I met my burden at that point, went to talk to my client, explained to my client what the situation encountered, did everything I'm required to do under the professional rule, and my client said, don't tell him.
Before you dig into that,
yes,
I want to take you back.
Okay.
At the conclusion of the hearing, the trial judge did not approve the settlement.
Correct.
But that's all he did. He said, settlement's not approved. The statute about lump sum settlements, sub 2 and one of the subdivisions thereunder, says if the settlement is not approved, the compensation court may dismiss the application at the cost of the employer or continue the hearing in the discretion of the compensation court. But he didn't do either one of those things. Isn't that right?
That's true.
So where does that put us in terms of the finality of this order?
The problem is that plaintiff is being coerced into exposing what we believe is attorney-client information, which is the fees and expenses. His order doesn't say what that should be, but it does say, I'm not approving this because you didn't disclose this information. Everything else has been done, thank you very much, but because you haven't disclosed this information, I'm not going to do anything. So in terms of finality, my client is now prejudiced. My client can only either accede to what the court wants, which is disclose this information, or not, and not get the benefit of her bargain. One of the things I pointed out, I think, very clearly in my evidence, this is not a clean case. There are four things that could happen in this case if we went to trial, and three of those were bad for my client.
Did the court effectively dismiss the application?
The court effectively dismissed the application for the lump sum. It's odd. I mean, it's strange, but I'm trying not to reach beyond another case, because I had another case, similar situation, denied it, client said to heck with it, disclose it, I disclosed it, it was approved. But that's outside this record. So
did the judge sort of conditionally disapprove? In other words, you not requiring you to file another application for approval of lump sum settlement. All you needed to do was comply with the request for the fee information.
Correct.
And then the judge would take it up without the need for another motion.
Correct. And
what you think the judge was doing?
And I think that's why he put in his order that everything else has been complied with except this.
Argument that this is privileged? How is a fee information fall within the scope of attorney-client privilege?
Well, anything that goes between an attorney and a client is privileged.
Well, is that right? Anything? Or is it communications made for the purpose of securing legal advice?
H- how do you differentiate between what is information reserved for legal advice versus
Do you have any authority that a fee agreement is covered, details of a fee agreement is always covered by attorney-client privilege?
It is not always covered because there are exceptions. For example, if I get in an argument with my client over that fee, then both I'm released by the rule to discuss that in court.
Do you have authority that it's generally covered by attorney-client privilege?
I guess what I would argue, Your Honor, is that because there are specific instances where I'm allowed to do it, the default is I am not allowed to do it unless that specific instance exists.
So your view is it's the client's to waive under this circumstance.
Correct.
Or not waive.
Correct. And that's part of the tension. It's not my decision. It's my client's decision. My obligation is to advise my client. At one point, I believe this is in the record. If it isn't, I apologize. I had worked out an in-camera, tried to work out an in-camera look, and an hour later, my client called. You know, I know it's none of the court's business. I said, okay. So I am kind of sitting here stuck, going, how do I get
tell us how you counseled the client?
I can't. Other than I can tell you that what I explained to the client, I felt it was privileged information. If you look at 506.4 in the professional rules of conduct, it in the comments section it specifically tells attorneys and guides attorneys what they're supposed to tell their clients in this circumstance. And I met that. I followed what the guidance is. I started to write my brief talking about Judicial Code of Ethics, and I thought to myself, you sound like a scold. That's not your job. That's the judge's job. My job is to talk about the professional rules of conduct because I'm on this side of the bar. And it seems to me that if we look at all the facts and circumstances in this case, and you look at the language of the Judicial Code of Ethics regarding settlements, 5-302.6b, a judge may encourage parties to proceed their lawyers to settle matters in dispute, but shall not act in a manner that coerces any party into settlement. The only reason that we had to have court approval in this case, as Ms. Canning pointed out in her brief, is because my client was old enough to be a Medicare beneficiary. Had she not been a Medicare beneficiary, we could have submitted a release to the court and been done with it.
So in those situations where court approval is required, are you taking the position that the content of a fee agreement can never be important to the judge's determination about whether or not to approve it?
Yes, I think I am taking that position. I cannot think of a situation where it would be germane.
So if the settlement said, the fee agreement said, the lawyer gets 99% and the client gets 1%, that would never be relevant?
It would be wrong. I don't know that it would be relevant to force disclosure of that absent an objection by one of the parties. That's the kind of the crux. It's you know, we have cases where we have incompetence, and there are procedures to go to the county court and have your fee approved. And that's statutory, and it says this is how you shall do this. But in the comp court, 108 talks about fee disputes, talks about liens. But it's not just a blanket, here, give me your fees. One of the things I think is very important, and this is in there, the rule that was passed by the comp court requiring the disclosure of fees and expenses was not presented to the Supreme Court in the fall for approval in the final rules. But it is still being used by the comp court as a rule to enforce the lump sums.
Well, how else would the judge be able to make a determination as to whether or not the settlement was in the best interests of the client?
Well, I think that if you look through my affidavit, Your Honor, I meet all the obligations under the requirements of best interests of the client. I have my client exercise an affidavit that talks about, you know, she was a manager. She's not some blue-collar kid working on the street sweeping dirt. She's a very savvy woman. She knows what's going on. You know, if you look at the totality of the circumstances, you look at the totality of the evidence that we put before the court, I think it's clear that the best interests of my client, we talked about the risks. We talked about the risks attendant to her. I mean, this was an all or nothing case. She was going to get nothing or she was going to get something, and the chances that she's getting nothing was 3 to 4.
But the court doesn't know if this is the 99% to 1% or somewhere near it in Judge Castle's hypothetical.
That's true. That's true. I can't stand up here and say it's not true, but there's no dispute between my client and me about the fee. The tension for me is that the court is requiring us in every instance to disclose this information, but it only happens in those cases where you have to ask for approval. Because if you don't have to ask for approval, then we don't have to disclose this stuff. So now you're treating members of the bar differently as well. I mean, it seems to me that that rule, in and of itself...
Is that just a function of the statute, though?
What's that?
Is that just a function of the statute?
I don't believe it is, no. I don't believe that statute gives him the authority to do what he's saying he can do. And I mean, I appreciate his argument. I appreciate his order, but I think he's wrong. That's why I'm here. Any other questions? Because I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Canning, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Lindsay Canning, representing the Appley employer, Family Dollar Stores of Nebraska. It's our position, Your Honors, that the trial court erred in denying our application for lump sum settlement. It hindered the party's expectation for settlement based on the time, cost, and uncertainty with moving forward with trial. It also hindered settlement based on disclosure of what we believe to be immaterial facts for the settlement, which is the fee agreement between Mr. Meister and his client. This would not otherwise be disclosed but for the requirement that the court approve settlements where the plaintiff is a Medicare beneficiary or Medicare eligible, as we have here. In this case, the parties entered a simple contract agreement. We had an offer.
Why do you think the legislature put the Medicare condition in the statute?
Well, Your Honor, Medicare's interests need to be considered. If there's any conditional payments, they need to be paid back. And that's a fact that far reaches the workers' compensation settlement. So they're going to need to be considered regardless of the settlement that you have. So it's a step that we took to do so based on 48-139. 48-139 states, though, that once if the employee's attorney elects to affirm Medicare's interests and goes to take the steps to make sure they're properly considered, that the settlement shall be, it shall be conclusively presumed that Medicare's interest is in conformity with the compensation schedule and in the best interest of the employee.
And that the fiscal impact to the state has been factored in.
Of course.
So what do you think the judge did here? What does it mean to say I disapprove? Was that a continuance of the hearing or was that a dismissal?
I don't read it as a dismissal. I read it as simply based on the way the application was submitted, I can't approve it. It's disapproved. To me, that leaves the door open to file another application with the requested information or continue the case forward to a trial. Nothing was dismissed.
So you think it's essentially a continuance?
Essentially. The parties entered into an agreement,
Let me ask that question a different way. Does the statute give the judge the option of disapproving?
I believe so, Your Honor, but again, as was mentioned previously, it states he may also take additional steps to dismiss. So I don't see anything in the statute that prohibits him from disapproving. But again, it's based on a fact that isn't looked at in every settlement in every case. So this highlights the discrepancies between work comp settlements and the approval and non-approval in certain situations.
Well, historically, they all had to be approved. I mean, the release option, the release path is relatively new.
Correct.
All right.
At issue, I believe, is the application of 48139, which sets forth the requirements for when parties need to submit lump sum settlement applications, what needs to be included, and in what situations the application must be made to the court. As Mr. Meister stated, the only reason we're here is because Ms. Lloyd was a Medicare beneficiary, and per the statute, that settlement then needed to be approved to be sure that Medicare's interests were considered. If any one of 48139-1A requirements are not met, we can file a release of liability, which does not require court approval and does not require disclosure of the fees. Further, Your Honors, it's our position that the amount of attorney fees and expenses is an immaterial fact.
Why do you think that's immaterial?
If it were material, it would be required either in all settlements, in a release of liability as well, or the court would require all settlements to be approved. So, again, the only reason we're here is because we hit the Medicare beneficiary threshold.
So did you hear Justice Castle's hypothetical earlier that if the fee agreement was that 99% of it went to the lawyer, would not that be relevant to a judge approving the settlement?
Your Honor, I believe in these cases, it should be noted that it's no consequence to my client what the fee arrangement is with Mr. Meister. Our agreement was with Ms. Lloyd. Ms. Lloyd had legal counsel. It's presumed that she sat down with her attorney and discussed the number, the final lump sum settlement that we were offering, weighed her pros and cons, knew what her fee agreement would be with Mr. Meister, and she accepted the settlement offer.
So is your argument that if there is a stipulation that the only option the judge has is to approve?
Yes, Your Honor, because I don't believe the attorney fees and costs need to be included if we have representation by the plaintiff.
So if the court considers the Medicare interest and is satisfied that that's covered, the rest of it doesn't matter.
Well, it's conclusively presumed that it's in the best interest of the injured worker. And that was one of the arguments that was brought up.
Where do you get conclusively presumed? Where do you get authority for that?
Your Honor, I'm looking at 48139 2B3.
Were the settlement funds in this matter greater than Medicare would subrogate for?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
Are the settlement funds in this matter greater than the total that Medicare may try to subrogate for?
No, Your Honor. In fact, we obtained a $0 Medicare set-aside allocation report and final CMS approval of that amount. So the parties did what they were supposed to do and considered Medicare's interest. So the lump sum payment was directly going to Ms. Lloyd in this case.
Factually, what can we tell from that information? That the workers' compensation insurer paid all of the bills related to this event and Medicare never had to pay any? Isn't that what we take from that information?
Actually, the opposite in this case. This was a denied workers' compensation claim from the onset of the injury. No medical bills were paid by our client to Ms. Lloyd. However, for the alleged injury, we submitted everything required to a third-party provider who prepares Medicare set-aside allocation reports and obtained a $0 MSA on a denied claim. So
isn't the heart of the argument that, in effect, both sides are making today, the statutory argument is the language in 48139 2B i that says if the compensation court finds such lump sum settlement is made in conformity with the compensation schedule and for the best interests of the employee or his or her dependents under all the circumstances, the compensation court shall make an order approving the same, is in effect modified by the language from sub 3I that you quoted earlier about the conclusive presumption with respect to the Medicare.
Yes.
In other words, best interest under all the circumstances in little one, when you have someone that's only in this regime because they're Medicare eligible, doesn't mean all best interest. It means only Medicare best interest. That's the heart of the argument.
Yes, Your Honor. Finally, our client, Your Honors, has been unfairly prejudiced by the court's denial of our application. Now our client does not receive the benefit of a release of liability in the closed file. It's lost control over the outcome of this case. Neither party can now control the outcome if we need to move forward to a trial, which was not what was bargained for when entering into a settlement agreement. I think it's important to note that this agreement was made in early 2018. We then obtained an MSA. The documents were submitted nearly a year ago. So both sides have had to incur the uncertainty and additional litigation expense to be here today, all based on a fact that we believe is immaterial for the court to consider, considering Ms. Lloyd is represented. We agreed, again, to pay Ms. Lloyd whatever her fee arrangement is with her attorney. She knew that. She understood that from day one. Whether it was going to be $1,000 or $200,000, she knew exactly where she would stand. And I don't believe it's the court's business to interfere in the final settlement, again, only because she's a Medicare beneficiary.
Is your view, if, so to speak, if the best interests of Medicare have been taken care of, then the best interests of the employee are assumed?
Not assumed. I believe that's the reading of that section, though, that, yes, the best interests are presumed if we consider Medicare's interests as well and affirm the same in an application. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the next case of the day, then, which is Adair Holdings, LLC versus Johnson.